Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey Lee, what is one of the places that reminds you of your childhood?
Well, you know, thinking about it, I've been coming up with something. I think Chuck E. Cheese is a place that reminds me of my childhood for a couple reasons. I mean, you got the video games. I love going and playing those games for the tickets, and then I give them to my daughter, right? But the other reason is the pizza, right? That pizza has the perfect consistency of like a junior high cafeteria, and you know, sometimes I need that like in my life. In fact, I once ordered a pizza through Grubhub from Chuck E. Cheese, and it was probably like $12 more than it ever would have been if I had just bought it at Chuck E. Cheese. But I didn't have to take my daughter to play the games.
Okay, Lee, like I get it. It's a place where a kid can be a kid, but Grubhub? Seriously?
Yeah, Grubhub. It was good. I loved it.
Dude, you are a strange man, Lee.
I don't even think they knew. There wasn't like pizza boxes. I don't think it was like in like those old school foam boxes.
Oh wow, dude, you're wild. Well, you know what? I get it though. Like we all have those places that remind us about being a kid. And today we're going to talk about a place that is very dear to me. It's a spot called Camp Grizzly, just outside Harvard, Idaho. But we aren't just taking a stroll down memory lane. Oh no, Lee. We brought an expert on the grisly ghost stories of Camp Grizzly. Insert groans here. Silly. Roll the tape. Back Beyonders, you have found your way back to the Beyond Terrestrial Podcast once again, your home for the strange, the macabre, the conspiratorial, and the downright weird. I'm Dan Martson, one half of your hosting duo, recording just down from the crossroads where Robert Johnson made his infamous deal with the devil. I am joined, as always, by one of Beyond Terrestrial's founding fathers, Mr. Lee Arrett. Lee, how's it going?
It is going great. I am coming to you, as always, from the Bell Witch's backyard in the Haunted Barn Studios. And today we've got an amazing thing going on. We have a guest, a Miss Kalila Wright, is an author, local historian, and a mom. She grew up in North Idaho and holds degrees from the University of Idaho as well as Washington State University. She has worked teaching college courses and as an economist and lives in Dan's old hometown of Potlatch, Idaho. When she isn't working on rescuing cats, Kalila writes fiction, nonfiction, and she does some political cartooning for the Moscow Pullman Daily News, the Spokesman Review, Huckleberry's online blog, and Idaho Magazine. And today she will be regaling us with some of her tales of the hoodoos as we discuss her work. Kalila, it's great to have you on Beyond Terrestrial. Tell us a little more about yourself.
Hi, Dan and Lee. Now I have a big pause while watching you guys. In addition to working as an economist and teaching college, which I no longer do that anymore, I have worked with the United States Census Bureau since 2012, so I literally talk to strangers for a living. which is why I had absolutely no problem talking to you guys today.
That's awesome.
That's great. That's what we do too. They just don't talk back to us.
Now, you see, I'm really weird, Kalila. I'm a super nerd for like statistics and the work that the Census Bureau does. And it's a census year, so props to you guys. Good work.
Thank you. It's actually been really difficult this year because, as you know, COVID-19 has us all in our homes, so we can't go knock on doors. So we've been doing a lot of work by phone, and it is impossible to get people to answer a phone for a strange number. And then when they do answer, you have to convince them that you're not a scam. And then when you tell them you're the government, they still don't want to talk to you. So it has been really fun.
That wow. Probably explains why I got an uptick in Idaho calls from my...
Yeah, go online, do your census.
I've already done my census. I don't know why I keep getting called.
We can talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah. When I got mine, I was like, oh, I just have it in my mind that you get a form, you fill it out, you fill in the bubbles, because that's what my parents did. That's how I thought it was going to be. But this is the 21st century. So, guys, go online, fill out your census. Otherwise, your state could be hit with a dramatic undercount, and then you're going to lose out on a whole bunch of federal money. So don't make sure you go do your census.
For the TikTok and YouTube generation, it's your state could be demonetized.
That's what they call it.
More importantly, for something that they might understand, is it helps determine funding for roads. So if you would like to avoid potholes, do your census.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Note taken. Note taken.
Yeah. Now, we're already off track because I'm such a nerd, Kalila. But the topic for today is Camp Grizzly. And I loved Camp Grizzly growing up. I lived in Potlatch, Idaho. It's only a few miles down the road. Our Boy Scout troop went there all the time. I was an Eagle Scout, no big deal. But back when I went, it still had the old shower house, and they hadn't updated the lodge. I just saw they updated the lodge this year and the kitchen. So they've been doing a lot of work. When I went there, it was pretty... I'm not going to say ramshackle, but it was one of the, it was kind of the redheaded stepchild of the camps in the council. How about when you were there, Kalila? Had they done any updating yet?
They had not. We actually had to time when we could do showers. So for the staff area, if you were over 18, you could shower from midnight to noon. And if you were under 18, you showered from noon to midnight because we all had to share one shower house.
Ooh. Yeah. That's rough. I remember hearing stories about they had issues with the septic system and all kinds of things, but they had a big donor step up. I believe it was the Schweitzer family who gave them like $1 million gift, and they've done a lot of work up there, and it's a heck of a lot nicer than it used to be.
Schweitzer makes sense.
Yeah. So
that's my input.
I guess the place to start isn't with the old showers, because that's not a very interesting story. But with the early frontier history of the area, starting with probably one of the earliest documented residents, a Mr. John Griswold. What can you tell us about the early settlers of what would become the Camp Grizzly area?
John Griswold was, so far as we know, the first white settler to live on the property that is Camp Grizzly and Layard Park. He moved there prior to the 1880s. He was looking to get away from civilization. It was him and his Nez Perce wife. And they settled, put in a small orchard. There were some apple trees, some plum trees. And that area where Camp Grizzly and Layard Park is actually known, or at the time was known, as Griswold Meadow. But after the 1880s, gold was discovered in the river in front of his home. and he ended up disappearing. Local legend was that he moved on, but knowing the greed and the that gold inspires, and taken in conjunction with a lot of other killings in the area, it is entirely possible that John Griswold met a much darker fate.
Ooh. That is pretty gnarly. And in those times, you can imagine gold rush fever just grab a hold of guys, and these later stories are going to prove that in a very dark and kind of sad way.
Gold.
Now, Lee, John Griswold's wife was a member of the Nez Perce tribe. Have you ever heard people who aren't from the area, a lot of them will use the French pronunciation?
I hear Nez Perce a lot. I don't think that's the French pronunciation.
Yeah, no, in the French, a lot of people would say Ne Perce.
Never heard that one. Lake Pendole, I've heard a lot when people try to pronounce
Pendole.
Really? Yeah.
Now, Kalila, there are some stories that circulate amongst the scouts about the Nez Perce tribe occupying the area, but it doesn't really seem like those stories bear out in the historical record.
They don't. One of the most common stories was one called The Hand, and supposedly the camp was haunted by the hand of a Nez Perce warrior. The hand was apparently cut off by his brother. There's some interesting hauntings that go along with why you might think about a hand haunting. But the area wasn't actually part of the Nez Perce territory. It was sort of a no man's land. So it was the northern border for the Nez Perce, but it was the southern border for the Coeur d'Alenes. And there's another tribe that most people don't even realize existed, and that's the Palouse tribe. There are still members of the Palouse tribe that do exist. A lot of them live on the Colville Reservation now. So what we had with Camp Grizzly is sort of this no man's land. So it didn't make a lot of sense that someone of Nez Perce descent would haunt Grizzly, unless, of course, you're counting Griswold's wife. I mean, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, right?
Right, or driven off her land and a murdered husband. Oh, yeah, that makes a great ghost story.
Absolutely. Spookily dookilies and all.
Now, I got to tell you, Kalila, I remember the stories of the hand, and they never really got me as a kid. I didn't think it was that scary because it always made me think of the Addams Family.
Well, you probably didn't have a poltergeist-infested meat slicer either.
No, I never worked in the kitchen. No, I didn't. I would go at midnight for cereal. I would always get cereal out of the dispenser. I'd never go in the kitchen. That place is still a mystery to me. Although I've heard it was part of their updates that they just did. So.
There was a poltergeist-infested meat slicer?
Yeah, so the kitchen at Camp Grizzly had a 1930s vintage meat slicer. And, of course, the junior staff weren't allowed to use it because it didn't have a finger guard. I mean, you could just imagine all the cuts that we got from wood carving merit badge, let alone what would happen with a meat slicer. But the thing had a short in the wiring, so the camp director says, and it would come screeching to life with nobody around it. And the junior staff insisted it was the Nez Perce warrior coming for their hand.
Where was OSHA? That is terrifying.
It's a non-profit. It's all grandfathered in, man.
All right, well, seems super safe. Hey, here's this unguarded meat slicer that just turns on randomly.
Right. The one thing I remember from the kitchen was the giant mixer. This thing was massive. It must have been like a 10-gallon mixing bowl that you could put in this thing. It was huge.
Oh, yeah. I've seen those at, like, my grandparents were big into, like, playing at senior centers and stuff. So I've seen those quite a bit, actually, those just gigantic mixers. All right, well, circling back to the talk with Kalila here, the next story is one that Dan remembers well from his youth and had been suggested as a topic for us before we read your article. This is one of the darkest local legends on the Palouse. What can you tell us about the poisoning of Strychnine Creek?
Well, it happened between 1885 and 1889, and that's actually how Strychnine Creek got its name. At the time, Chinese miners were not allowed to mine. There was also a head tax that they had to pay. So they were supposed to rent a claim from a miner who had moved on. And that's what they did up in Excavation Gulch. You can actually see the trailhead. There's a way to hike up in there and look at it. So we had a tongue of Chinese miners who rented the claim at Excavation Gulch and began mining it. Apparently, they had dug a ditch around the ridge from Strychnine Creek over to Excavation Gulch so that they would have water for sluicing and bench replacers, things like that. And once they had water in the draw, then the claim proved to be really profitable. And that inspired jealousy, of course, from the white miners down at Camp Grizzly, which at the time was called Grizzly Camp. They inverted the name. But once the bonanza was discovered, a lot of the Chinese miners would actually send the money home or save it to bring more people over. And so it wasn't flowing out at the card tables down at the camp. So in order to capture that claim for themselves or steal the gold, someone actually went up and put strychnine in the ditch that they used for cooking and bathing and all of that. And all of the miners up there died during the Strychnine Creek Massacre. There was no, so far as we know, there was no law enforcement action taken. People just sort of turned a blind eye to the massacre. You can see it mentioned in later newspaper articles when they talk about people coming in to jump the giant Chinese claim. So there is some pretty interesting history up there. And if you're looking for ghosts, a whole bunch of angry Chinese men guarding a bunch of gold is a good place to start.
Absolutely. And that's just a terrible way to resolve an issue. I can never imagine that, but I guess it was a different time, so... yeah. Well, hey...
Yeah.
Dan.
Well, oh, yeah. What's up, Lee?
I was thinking, before we jump into the next story, why don't we take a quick break?
Oh, let's do it. Let's take five.
Believe in UFOs? Felt that chill up your spine that you just can't explain? Contemplate the other side of reality? Do you shake your head at the world that seems to have lost its common sense? Well, look no further than Strange Uncles. Find them on all podcast platforms and call their hotline to tell your side of reality at 801-252-6945. Open the gates.
All right, and we're back. Dan, I believe you had the next question.
Yeah, if you were listening to our talk with Kalila before the break, we were talking about the Strychnine Creek Massacre, which was a terrible poisoning of a number of Chinese miners. Just for a little bit of context, Lee, there was a time where Chinese people were very strictly excluded from this country. Racism against Chinese people on the West Coast, it was dramatically terrible in a way that a lot of people don't realize now.
Yeah, I heard a lot of that stuff, and I'm just having a hard time wrapping my head around any sort of that kind of mindset, but then I look at events today and it's the same. I'm sorry.
Right. Right. Well, I remember as a kid, though, we'd go camping up at an area called the Dredge because they used to dredge gold from the river up there. They had a big machine in the river scooping up all this dirt, dredging gold, sluicing it out. And we'd go by Strychnine Creek every time we went, and the thought of hidden gold and dead miners and buried treasure, it has a real Western dime novel allure.
I'm going to go right back to what I was saying. Gold!
Gold. There's gold in them there hills. Well, sadly, Kalila, it wasn't just gold that drove people to violence in the Grizzly Camp area. There are more stories in the timberland surrounding Camp Grizzly. The tale of the Wobblies is one that actually really struck me. The Industrial Workers of the World was a violent union around the turn of the century, and they were very active in Idaho in the early 1900s. Members of that union even assassinated a former Idaho governor. So while I had heard the stories of these violent clashes that the Wobblies and the miners that they were trying to organize up in the Silver Valley had, I had not heard about the organizing that occurred in the lumber camps around the Camp Grizzly area. What can you tell us about that turbulent time?
Oh, it would have been around the time of World War I when the Wobblies were organizing. I believe they first started in 1905, but things really came to a head at World War I because they needed the lumber, especially spruce, for the famed airplane, the Spruce Goose. And the Department of Defense actually sent a general up to Potlatch to meet with Allison Laird and the mill because they were having trouble meeting the production goals. So there was a huge push to keep unions out of the mills and out of the lumber camps so that they could keep that production as high as possible. And that prompted a lot of really harsh treatment on behalf of the mill owners for their employees. I know Allison Laird put together a bullpen out at Beauville where suspected union members were taken and housed. The company doctor, Frank Gibson, joked on more than one occasion that rifles were used for more than deer because suspected Wobblies would be shot.
Wow. That is intense. And way back in the day, this is like in the sixth grade at old Potlatch Elementary, I remember we did a town history project. I think it was more with the Gifted and Talented program because, you know, no big deal. I was on the fast track back in the day. But that's how I became a Jeopardy champion. Shout out to Potlatch Elementary School. But that's neither here nor there. We did this town history project. This is not something that we covered in the sixth grade, Kalila, the murder of union organizers near the town by company officials.
It's glossed over a lot of places. There was an incident, it's called the Beauville incident, and it resulted in strikes in lumber camps from Grangeville to Spokane, where people just walked off the job in solidarity with Potlatch loggers. And when you read really scholarly sources. I know Keith Peterson wrote about Company Town, and he even glosses over it. He just says, in solidarity with the Potlatch incident, and never actually says what the incident was. But I did find several oral histories that did talk about shooting Wobblies.
Wow. That's gnarly. I remember that Keith Peterson book, Company Town, was actually one of our main sources during that sixth grade project. I remember that book distinctly. And thinking of these old company executives living on Knob Hill in the nicest houses in town, looking down on the mill site, it all going camping up at what would become Laird Park and picnicking with their families. It all had this kind of very romantic 1920s kind of feel to it. But you realize these guys were managing some really rough and tumble guys, loggers, out there in a pretty frontier area. It's a lot different than what I pictured as a kid.
we do tend to tell our best stories about ourselves. but when you take a look, you know, and wash that veneer away, sometimes you see things that you don't really want to see.
Well, that's kind of an example of, you know, history is written by the victors. Maybe not entirely, but if you really look at that, we're going to paint ourselves in the best light possible to our children.
And the Wobblies were persecuted almost out of existence in the early 1900s. In fact, the eventual president of the Wobblies was prosecuted for assassinating an Idaho governor. So it's crazy. They were planting bombs. There's strikes. I mean, wow. It's something like I just find so interesting because of how glossed over it is. Now, Kalila, there are a lot of other ghastly stories that are actually pretty crazy. There's a disappearance of a man who was going from Palouse to Moscow and just poof, gone out of nowhere. Can you tell us a little bit about this story?
Oh, gosh. Yes, I mean, I can, but for the life of me, Lamphere, that's his name. Alan Lamphere. I was afraid I'd forgotten it. So Mrs. Lamphere, his wife, had gone into Moscow to visit their daughter, and he was supposed to go pick her up. Now, you know, Palouse to Moscow isn't very far, and it's not in the direction of Camp Grizzly, that's for sure. And so when he did not show up, Mrs. Lamphere became very concerned, and she called the sheriff, I believe it was Hap Moody, and they sent out search parties to just drive all the roads between Moscow and Palouse to see if they could find him. And he was never found. So since they couldn't find him, they put together search parties. Still nothing turned up between Moscow and Palouse at all. Fog rolled in. You know how the Palouse gets that freezing fog, and then we had some light snow. And he ended up... Well, his car ended up being found by hunters 2 days later up in the Hoodoos. This was actually not on the Camp Grizzly side. It was over on the Emerald Creek side where they found him, but he would have driven right past Camp Grizzly to get up there. So why he went in entirely the opposite direction, no one really knows. But his car was found. One of the tires was burned off. The hunters did say that they saw his footprints going up the road for about 2 miles before disappearing into the snow and the brush. So they called out a search party. Mrs. Lamphere offered a $1,000 reward, which back in the day would have been huge. I haven't adjusted for inflation, but quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
I think they had 400 volunteers. Couldn't find the man. Just gone. During that, it was November, so hunting season, and about 2 weeks later, some hunters from Genesee came out, and they had sighted Mr. Lamphere. He'd actually wandered through their camp, but at the time, because they were out there, you know, you didn't have cell phones, they weren't connected, they didn't know he was a missing person. So now that they had a new lead, they went out again, and the hunters said it was just very unusual circumstances. He walked out of the woods under a bright full moon. I actually went and checked the lunar calendar for that year, and it was, in fact, a bright full moon. And he went straight through their camp, wouldn't acknowledge them. They were all by the fire having coffee, getting ready to go hunt, and then into the woods again. And so they called out the search party again. Nothing. No trace of him at all. The man just disappeared. And 5 years later, somebody found a skull and some other human remains outside of Beauville, and it turned out to be Mr. Lamphere. And no one knows why he headed that direction. He was considered a respectable businessman. He was a banker in Palouse. There was no reason for it. It's just one of those mysteries of the Hoodoos.
That is a wild story, Lee. Lee, what? I know there are a lot of other crazy UFO conspiracy stories out there. This is stuff that you're more into. Does this remind you of any of those tales that that we've delved into or you've heard others?
It reminds me of a couple of them. One would be potentially maybe something like what people call time slips. A time slip is essentially kind of what it sounds like. Like you're just traveling along and then you look around and you're in a completely different time than you were before. And that's traveling back in time or forward in time. But another one that I think is the most accurate is what is referred to as in a book called Missing 411. In that book by David Pilates, we've done a show on one of his things. He discusses all of the different people that go missing in national parks. And what he discovered when he started doing the research was that there was no database of people that were missing from national parks. Now, there was missing persons databases, but they were all separated, and none of them had been used. Like, nobody had put the numbers together on national park disappearances. And it turns out there's a lot of them, like just a ton of people just disappearing, or children disappearing from a national park and then showing up, sometimes still alive, sometimes dead, or sometimes, you know, no longer alive. But in places that don't make sense. A six-year-old child traveling 1,800 feet up the side of a mountain doesn't make sense for that to happen. But there's no sign of, like, major injuries. Usually they die of things like exposure or something like that, which sounds similar to this scenario. The question is, how did he end up there? How did he travel? I'm trying to do the math in my head. I lived in northern Idaho for a little while. I'm trying to... How far would he have traveled from where his vehicle was abandoned to just outside of, you said, Beauville?
Yeah, it was well, I think it was 4 miles outside of Beauville is what they said. And
all the way from Palouse, that's a good stretch. That's at least, 40 miles?
Well, his car was found up by Emerald Creek, so he would have been closer to Beauville there. But that's rough country. I mean, you would have been walking through creeks and mountains and heavy terrain with snow on the ground. So it was a considerable distance to travel from Emerald Creek all the way over to Beauville.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So
and the roads back there are pretty rough now. Mm-hmm. I mean, could you imagine in a 1950s automobile in even rougher roads?
Well,
it's almost.
His remains weren't found anywhere near the automobile. That's the interesting thing, is that he got out and he walked 4 miles through the snow. And we don't know why he drove, you know, clear up and over the Palouse Divide and in Emerald Creek, let alone why he left his car and just kept walking. It's a very interesting situation.
It reminds me a little bit of, I was listening to a recent episode of a podcast I listened to, the Yuba City 5, and it was five semi-mentally disabled men that were in like a work group, but they were capable of taking care of themselves. They just lived at home with their parents, and they drove their car up at the side of a mountain, abandoned the car. They weren't found for months later, and then their remains were found like it was, you know, through the winter and into summer was when their remains were finally found. So
right. You know, another story that reminds me of Lee is one I was just suggested by a listener today. Shout out to Joshua Hedges. The Dyatlov Pass incident.
Absolutely. I was just about to say that one.
Mm-hmm. Go out into the wilderness and something happens, something that no one can explain. I don't know what it is about these remote areas, Lee. There's something that drives people to do things that can't be explained later on, and because they are the only ones out there and there's no one else to see what happens when they eventually succumb to the elements, there's no explanation for what happened. Only they know what was going on, and the facts have died with them.
I have a theory, and I hope I don't scare Kalila off with this, but I theorize that one of two things. When you look at when you look at the missing 411 cases, a lot of them correspond with large cave networks throughout the United States, which is one thing. The other one, some people would say UFOs. I think it's Bigfoot.
There are a few tales of Bigfoot in the Palouse.
Oh, we're getting to those questions for you in a moment.
Boy. Okay. Well, no, that's actually really cool-y. I don't remember. Kalila, do you know about any cave systems up in the Palouse Divide area? I don't think I can think of any. Maybe some old mines or something like that, but nothing too extensive.
No, there aren't any caves so far as I'm aware. And a lot of the mining was actually panning or placering. There are very few tunnel mines in the Palouse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's turn a little bit from some of these serious topics, Kalila. That way we can get to Lee's big Bigfoot finale. But we want to talk about some of the smaller stories. In fact, maybe some of the ones that you invented for campers up at Camp Grizzly. Some of the tales that kids tell up there. You wrote about one that you created, a jilted bride. Can you tell us about how that story came about?
So the year I worked at camp, we actually had a cougar on camp. Fish and Game thought it was possibly a young one. Are you guys familiar with 3D archery at all?
A little bit.
Okay, so for 3D archery, you go out and you walk a course and you shoot a target. And it's not a paper target, it's a foam deer or a foam turkey, right? It's something that looks like it. And the cougar we had on camp was going through our 3D archery courses, treating those foam deer like gigantic cat toys and just shredding them. And so you'd go out there and there'd be like deer heads and deer legs and turkey pieces. And it was just absolutely amazing. And as fun as that was to think we had a cougar playing with cat toys out on the 3D archery course, we were afraid that the scouts might get injured. Boys like to tell ghost stories. They like to dare each other. And the last thing we wanted was somebody to dare their camp tent mate to go walk the 3D archery course alone at night and end up being the cougar's next cat toy. So, yeah. I invented the trail of the Honor Trail Ghost. I'm not sure how many people are familiar with the Honor Trail, but it was something that they did on Wednesday night. You walk the old Hoodoo Trail, and you get bits of camp history, points of the Scout Law, other things. And so we called it the Honor Trail. But because it had that connection to the old Hoodoo Trail, I thought that was a great place to go for a ghost story. And so in my story, which was entirely fiction, I had a woman whose betrothed was Potlatch Logging Company's doctor. And he had gone out on the Hoodoo Trail because there was an accident and somebody needed to be saved in some way. I don't know. We never got into what the accident was. but if you are familiar of what's called widowmakers, trees that just lean unnecessarily. So in the Hoodoo story, this doctor succumbed to a widowmaker. Like, he was killed on his way to saving this logger in this logging camp accident. And since it was his wedding day, like, the bride is like pacing up and down at the church, right? She's like, where is he? He would be here. Well, we'll just go. We'll go to the camp. And on the way, they see him dead, and she just goes crazy. Like, she gets an axe from the logging camp because she's going to, you know, chop up the tree and get him out from under there. And of course, he's dead, and she just goes crazy, and she runs off, never to be seen again. So in order to really bring that point home, I had, not terribly recently, but recently enough that it didn't bother me, but had a wedding dress. And I put that puppy on and grabbed an axe and went screaming through camp every Monday night all summer long.
Oh my gosh, that's perfect.
Yes.
That is so cool. I love some of the stuff that we used to do up at camp. You know, Friday night campfire was always like the highlight of the week. I love Friday night campfire. I love the skits. I love how it winds down as the fire gets low. The honor trail was always great on Wednesdays too. The flag retirement ceremonies that they would do were always really cool. So anytime you get a chance to go up the Hoodoo Trail to the Fire Bowl there at Camp Grizzly, it's actually a pretty good time.
Meanwhile, I was stuck at church camp, so that was fun.
you guys didn't do anything fun like that?
No. I mean, I remember some fun things, but the biggest memory I've got out of the whole experience is probably when the bus, like, with my knowledge now, I'm pretty sure it was the transmission that blew out on it while it was going up a hill. We were going to some, like, I think it was a water, like, not a water park, but, like, you know, a hot spring kind of thing. And we're going over this pass and loud banging sound, and then the bus loses all power. And I just remember, because I was, I don't know, like 9 years old or something like that, and what I and the person that I am, I scream, "We're all gonna die!" And I got in so much trouble.
Oh man, that is great. No, I remember one of the years I was at camp, we had an exchange scout. I know this is kind of crazy, is like an exchange student. He was from Taiwan. We called him Charlie because no one could pronounce his Chinese name.
That's kind of racist.
That's something that people do. No. That happens all the time, Lee. Kalila knows, if you go to a university that has a lot of Chinese exchange students and TAs, a lot of them will give you an English name. They'll say, "Oh, my name's Sarah," even though they have a Chinese name because no one can actually pronounce
no,
their Chinese.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying
but
the name Charlie.
Charlie in Vietnam?
What was that?
Charlie and the Viet Cong, and yeah.
No, he was Chinese.
It's close
well,
enough.
Well, he was Taiwanese, so that's no, it's he's not Taiwanese. He's Chinese ethnically because Taiwan was part of China. But it doesn't matter. anyways.
Moving on.
We took a drive out to the B-17 bomber trail. There was a B-17 bomber that crashed in the woods not too far from Camp Grizzly, up around the Great White Pine campground up there. And the government came in and buried it because this was in the 40s when it crashed and all the technology inside that plane was top secret. So there's a trail that goes around there now and you can't take any artifacts or anything. It's all very historic. And first year scouts would go on a hike with the commissioners at the camp up to that B-17 trail every year. And Charlie loved it. He was taking pictures of the trees along the side of the road as we're driving. And people said, "Charlie, what are you taking pictures of? They're just trees next to the road." He goes, "Oh, no. In Taiwan, they cut the trees back, you know, 50 meters or something like that from the road." So he was fascinated that the trees were right by the road and took a ton of pictures. And he was a really cool guy. He taught us some sweet knots.
That's actually kind of a smart idea. Like, less accidents involving cars running into trees if they're not so close to the road. Just saying.
yeah,
speaking of
true.
Hiking in trees, did you ever hike up to the pea tree?
To the pea tree?
Yes.
No.
Oh my God. So yeah, there's a snag up on the ridge, and you're supposed to hike up there, pee on the tree, and then carve your initials.
Oh my goodness, I missed out on this tale.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
I never did that.
My initials and the initials of both of my boys and our troop number are on the pea tree.
Wow. Oh my goodness, that is classic. No, I love some of these hikes we took. The astronomy hike is always a good one. You hike up to that Minden's Meadow at night, look at the stars, real pretty spot. So there's so much great stuff out there around Camp Grizzly. And that's why Allison Laird and all these company executives loved it for years and years, and why they preserved it and gifted it to the Forest Service and Boy Scouts. And it's just a really, really cool spot. Now, Kalila, I have to turn it over to Lee because he has some very pressing questions about a certain hairy hominid. But firstly, we should take a quick break.
Yeah, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after a word from our friends at Fourth Hand.
Good evening, ma'am.
Hey, y'all.
What can I do you for?
Can I have a glass of Chardonnay?
I'm sorry, darling. We don't serve that here.
Any Merlot?
I'm pretty sure you don't want these feet going nowhere near them grapes.
Alrighty, how about a craft beer?
Oh yeah, we got plenty of craft beer. Which one you want?
No, not craft beer. Craft beer.
Oh, no, hell no. I'm pretty sure the bar down the street serves that.
Okay, well, what do you serve?
I'm glad you asked. Welcome to the Backwoods Barcast. We serve up moonshine, cheap beer, bottom shelf liquor, and stories even harder to swallow. Join Nick.
And Brittany.
And the janitor, Steven, as we discuss Southeastern mysteries and mayhem, including but not limited to UFOs, true crime, the paranormal, and much more. So knock four times, grab a stool, let the bar talk commence, and as always, drink more beer.
And we're back. Guys, this is it. This is what you've been listening for. Lee, hit us.
Okay, Kalila. I need you to be completely honest with me here. I'm getting very serious right now. Even though it sounds like I'm being sarcastic, I'm being very serious. Have you ever had an encounter yourself with a hairy hominid known as Bigfoot?
I am probably the only person who has a picture of Bigfoot poop.
You have a picture of Bigfoot poop?
Well, I don't know anybody with a degree in non-human primate scat, but I ran into something and it left a big pile, and I wasn't going to take it back with me, so I took a picture.
That's awesome. That is amazing. That is amazing. So let's talk more about this scat, I guess. it wasn't like bear scat. It was definitely something more humanoid
like. Well, I'm not an expert in primate scat either.
Okay.
But it wasn't bear, you know, it wasn't the soft black piles full of seeds that I'd seen bear scat. There'd been coyote scat on the trail that I was hiking. I knew moose scat, right? This wasn't it. I'd never seen poop like this before. I'm sorry.
See, that's what I was kind of trying to get at, by the way. Like, because I figured you would have known what bear scat would have at least, like, looked like for the most part. So that is awesome. And, you know, Bigfoot's got to poop somewhere. He's got to go. Now, he could be going in his interdimensional household, but you never know. Like,
oh, my goodness. Now, Kalila, there was kind of a Bigfoot boom around Potlatch a couple years ago. What was the story? A lady coming from Tensed thought she saw Bigfoot chasing a deer? She saw Bigfoot and was looking away from the road and hit a deer, I think is actually what happened. Is Bigfoot fever still embracing our small town?
Absolutely. If you haven't been there recently, they have a Bigfoot statue in front of the grocery store, and he is presently wearing a mask. It's not an N95, but they've got him covered.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Oh, I love it.
That is excellent.
I love it.
You know, if the high school mascot wasn't so entrenched as the loggers, I would seriously think about a petition to change it. Maybe the elementary school or something could change it. Wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, yeah. I'd love to see the elementary school little... I don't know what we would call them, though. Little feet?
Ooh, that's perfect.
Little feet?
That'd be so cute. Little big feet.
I love the idea of Bigfoot, and I personally believe that there's something out there. There's something that people are seeing. I don't know what it is. My personal thought process is probably something interdimensional, because there's never any, like, this is the first time I've ever heard of scat being left behind. It's always just been footprints. So I love that. So that's all.
There's footprints, there's trackways. I know Jeff Meldrum has also been working on hair samples. And he's actually, I interviewed Jeff Meldrum, who is a professor at Idaho State University, and he was an anthropologist with the Idaho Museum. But he's working on a drone project to actually do flyovers to see if he can find areas of Sasquatch activity.
That's a great idea. And I know about Mr. Meldrum, or Jeff Meldrum, because he's got one of the biggest collection of Bigfoot feet casts in the world, essentially. He's also considered an expert in it, I guess.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
His feet casts are actually called, I think they're the Virtual Footprint Library. And he's been doing it for quite a year. He has a book out, Sasquatch Legend Meets Science, I think is the title.
Okay. We'll check it out.
Well, that might be a whole nother show right there, Lee.
I agree.
Well, and actually they did an episode of Finding Bigfoot out around Moscow, up on Moscow Mountain, so not too far away from the Camp Grizzly area.
No.
They did, but the interesting thing is they weren't really going where people had claimed they had saw Bigfoot, so it was like they were setting themselves up to fail.
Oh. See, I never got a chance to sit down and watch it. Where did they end up going? They just go up the mountain to, like, the Cedar Grove and some of those pretty spots up there where you get a good view of town?
Yeah, they went up Moscow Mountain, but, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the lady who saw it in a field between Tinsit and Potlatch, that's, you know, completely different area. Out by Little Boulder, completely different area. So, who knows? Of course, you won't tune in for the next episode if they find him. So
that's a fair point. That's an absolute fair point. The thing with finding Bigfoot is it's almost like they think it's a joke themselves in some cases. Like Bobo just kills me. I hope he's serious, but oh my goodness.
Well, Lee, you know how it is. Sometimes you don't get everything right on the first take. You got to do it over again. It kind of becomes, I don't know, kind of a joke, especially reality TV's all fake. All fake.
But you are right. If they actually found Bigfoot, nobody would be tuning in next season. That's why they haven't found the treasure on Oak Island, and they'll never find anything at Skinwalker Ranch. That, and there's probably not anything at Skinwalker Ranch, but moving on.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe one day they will find the haunted Chinese gold stash of Strychnine Creek.
Ooh. And that'll be another story.
Yes. So, Kalila, I love sharing these stories of Potlatch, its time as a company town, and some of the forgotten history of the settlement of that area and the early days of the logging camps up there, and honestly, one of the best places ever, Camp Grizzly, where it's for the boys. And I loved my time as a Boy Scout. It was a very big part of my formative years. I
don't think there's anything like scouting for kids out there. You just can't compare it to other programs. It's totally different. Kalilo, what are some of your thoughts on scouting and Camp Grizzly as we wrap up our interview?
Well, I mean, you already know both my boys were scouts, and it was a program that they enjoyed immensely. Our troop was a very active troop. We hiked and camped all 12 months of the year, and it gets you out of the house and able to unplug and to connect in ways that you can't do over Zoom or Skype. And I think a lot of us are learning that right now. I know the more I've been stuck at home, the more I want to go out in the trees.
Yes, for sure. And now we have armed our listeners with a slew of ghost stories from one of our favorite spots. Lee?
I feel put on a spot right now. I don't know what I'm supposed to say.
Oh no! I thought you were I thought you were pointing at yourself that you wanted to say something.
No, I was scratching my beard.
Oh, okay, my bad.
That might stay in.
Yeah. Well, Kalila, we have had a blast talking about murderous history, campfire tales, cryptids, all this cool stuff. Where can people find more of your work? Do you have anything you want to plug?
Well, they can find it on my website, www.kalilawright.com. You're going to have to spell that for them. Also, like you mentioned, Idaho Magazine. You can find some of my articles there. And if you are particularly interested in Camp Grizzly history, connect with the Latah County Historical Society. I have done stories on the Camp Grizzly history in both of their last two editions of the Latah Legacy.
Really cool. We will have to put links in the show notes. I will remember to do that. Guys, if you want to connect with us at Beyond Terrestrial, you can find all of our episodes at our website, beyondterrestrial.com, all the major podcatchers. And as always, we'd like you to keep looking out for more tales from out there, Beyond Terrestrial.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Terrestrial Podcast. You can check us out on Apple Pod, Google Play, and other major podcast platforms.
And if you want to keep up with the show goings on, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Beyond T Pod. That's Beyond the letter T Pod.
And as always, you can get all of that information as well as show notes and episodes as they come out on beyondterrestrial.com. That's right, we got the .com.
And if you want to help out the show, give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or a like and a review wherever you listen to Beyond Terrestrial.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.
Welcome to Beyond Terrestrial, your home for the strange, the macabre, the conspiratorial, and the downright weird. I'm Lee, coming to you from the Bell Witch's backyard in the Haunted Barn Studios, and Dan is just down the road from where Robert Johnson made his infamous.
Holy shit. Talk about your all-time backfires.
And Dan is just down the road where Robert Johnson made his infamous.
Ah, fuck it, dude. Let's go bold.
Dan, where are you from today?
I am recording just down from the crossroads where Robert Johnson made his infamous deal with the devil, Lee.
There's the word I was looking for. You're going to be awkward. Kalila, I'm sorry, but I think we're going to have to start that intro all over again.
That's okay. Take it from the top.
Welcome back, Beyonders. I'm Lee, coming to you from the Bell Witch's backyard in the Haunted Barn Studios. And Dan, as always, is coming to you from just down from the crossroads where Robert Johnson... Dan is coming to you from just down from the cross... Oh, my God.
What in the hell's the matter with you?
Dan, will you just do the intro?
Okay, I got it.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Hold on. Welcome back, Beyonders. You have found your way back to the Beyond Terrestrial Podcast. Once again, your home for the strange, the macabre, the conspiratorial, and the downright weird. I'm Dan Martson, one half of your hosting duo. I'm recording from the... Oh, now you got me going.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.